There comes a point in your life where this kind of becomes the only question that you're asking, right?
You have to have the same worldview. You have to have the same goals and purposes in life. And if you don't have the same outlook, the same worldview, the same sense of authority, it's just not going to work.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to this latest episode of the Courageous Conversations podcast, a Briarcrest Ministries podcast. I'm joined once again by my, as I like to say, my friend and coworker in that order, Jonathan Bernhardt. And just to give you guys, I know you really want to know the inside baseball behind how the podcast works. We had a totally different topic planned for today. And yet, as things normally go around here, when at least I'm involved, I sent him a text message and I said, hey, we have a listener. It might be our only listener. I haven't looked at the stats lately. There might be a dozen or two of you out there, but one of our listeners actually suggested today's topic. So before we get into today's topic, what were we actually going to talk about today? So you can file this away for next time.
Well, we originally were talking about kind of like pain and suffering and grief and the question we often get from kids, both young and old, on if God is so good, how can there be pain and suffering in the world? Mm-hmm. Which, again, I think is a topic a lot of people do want to know a lot about. But then...
we'll talk about pain and suffering in another way. No, I'm kidding. So we are going to address that on the next episode is, what do you do with the fact that we serve a good, gracious, loving God, mm-hmm. but yet bad things still exist? And there's a lot of college professors out there that will use that concept, if God's all powerful and God's all good, why do bad things happen, to undermine a believer's faith. Mm-hmm. And so what are some biblical answers to that question? And if you've ever wondered that, well, guess what? You got to come back and listen next week. Because this week, we are talking about dating in order to find the one, what that looks like, high school, college, post-college, grad school. Because really, as we were talking about with our producer, James, earlier, we were talking about the fact that there's, and he made this point, so I want to give him a shout out. He made this point. There comes a point, John, in your life where this kind of becomes the only question that you're asking, right? Or at least one of the top three. So if you're, you know, college, young adult, you're thinking about where you're going to live. So you got to like have a job and like have sustenance and food and all of those things. And hopefully you're thinking about where you're going to worship, like what does church belonging to a church look like? And then in addition to that, you're thinking about who am I going to marry? And if I'm going to get married, is God calling me to marriage? Mm-hmm. Like all of those things. So we know that we've had a large amount of our students that have graduated from here that don't feel a call to singleness, which once again, according to 1 Corinthians 7, that is a thing that God calls some people to, which is singleness. And that has its benefits. For instance, when I go on a mission trip, as do you, we have families that we leave behind. It takes a year's worth of planning to just like mm-hmm. make sure that everything's taken care on home for us to at home for us to go mm-hmm. away for a week and some odd days to Ethiopia. So if we were single, just make sure someone gets the mail and checks on the apartment and we're good.
Yeah.
So there are definitely benefits to being single, but there are benefits to being married, and both are biblical and good and honorable. So for those who are out there, we're gonna just cast a wide net, and then I'm gonna let you riff on this. So for those who are out there, and you're of like dating age and not married, especially if you're at late high school, college, or beyond, this is for you. But you might be thinking, well, you know what? I, like you, Jason, have been married for 16 years. So what does this have to do with me? Well, guess what? I've got a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 6-year-old who are, I mean, my 12-year-old went to her first middle school dance.
Whoa.
I told her I was going to be the MC. I was going to host it. I was going to be the DJ, and I was going to have eyes all, and so I didn't actually do those things, but yeah, like that we're getting to that age where like that becomes a consideration as like so-and-so. And you know, when you're in elementary school, who knows what that means? You get to middle school, right. And then you get into high school, and all of a sudden we're having serious conversations mm-hmm. about, you know, we like people, we're going on dates with people. There's like 19 steps now yes. to like between the
what
moment.
What was the term that you just learned last week?
Oh my, a situationship. A situationship.
Sorry, I just thought that was funny.
I didn't know what that was, but you're not dating, but
it's
you're
like a non-committal dating scenario.
Yeah, so like we're committed, but we're not committed. Like yeah. That's also known as, in modern parlance, talking, I think. I don't know. I've had students like graph it out on a board and really talk about like all these different stages of dating. But nevertheless, even if you get past what is like all of the modern parlance for like, I like somebody, at some point, and this, it's fun to watch some of our students who have graduated from here go to a place where, like, maybe they were even dating in high school, mm-hmm. to college, where they start thinking seriously about the person they're dating, in the vein of marriage. Mm-hmm. So like, you look at our juniors and seniors and you make a joke about marriage and they're like, it's so far away. A year and a half later, they're like, wait, like, I got friends that are getting married. This is weird. So John, let me start by asking, that was a lot of preface to kind of get to where we're going today. But let me start by asking this, like, what is maybe the first thing that someone needs to consider? Because the question we got had to do with, I'm in college, maybe long distance dating, the busyness of the college mm-hmm. season. And if you're dating in college and your friends are starting to get engaged, you're probably thinking, okay, where is this relationship headed? So like, how do you know if this person's the one? Because you and I both know, like, relationships take work and investment, mm-hmm. especially if there's distance involved, which can happen oftentimes. So like, how do you even begin to frame this up in the mind of a believer, somebody who is thinking, all right. And once again, this is where the courageous conversation part comes in. We're thinking about this differently than a lot of the thought process of the world. So this is not about like hookup culture or just like, you know, dating for convenience sake, dating for status or anything like that. It's like, how do I honor God with my dating relationship? And this will look different than the world mm-hmm. in some respects, but where do I even start? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think an important part of that process, for Christians in particular, is obviously you have to have that same worldview. You have to have the same goals and purposes in life. You have to understand kind of where you come from and where you're headed. And if you don't have the same outlook, the same worldview, the same sense of authority, it's just not going to work. There will eventually be things, whether it's, you know, like, how do you discipline your children, or, you know, like, how do you make decisions on jobs eventually? You know, like, if you're not in it together, even just on the front end on dating, you're not on that same page, then the whole rest of it is just going to be off. And I'll say this too, you can both be walking with the Lord, just righteous, honorable Christians, and also not be a good fit for dating too. And I think that's something that sometimes in Christian culture, particularly in the South, is that people are like, well, you're both good people and you both love Jesus, and so you should just get married. And it's like, well, but our personalities clash wildly, and like, oh, you'll figure that out. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. Well, for sure. And that can be you can both love Jesus and still mm-hmm. not be compatible.
Right.
Like, and that's what I think a part of the dating process is. But I like that you started there, because really and truly, like, if I'm talking to my own kids, what I'm trying to tell them is like, find somebody who loves Jesus. Like, find somebody who loves Jesus and let's go from there. Mm-hmm. Because you're right. Like, if my wife and I, we disagree on something, we're going to go back to a set authority that we both have agreed to submit to. Mm-hmm. Here's the other thing. I give my wife so many opportunities to show me grace, because I screw up so many times. But because she loves me with the love of Jesus, like, there's something special about that. And I think if we're talking to a believer who's in Christ, like, if you're looking for somebody who is compatible for marriage, like, there is so much beauty in having a Christ-centered marriage. Imperfect, because I'm in part of it, but a verse that comes along with that is 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 39. A wife is bound to her husband as long as she lives, or as he lives, rather. But if her husband dies, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. Now, this is talking about like death and remarriage, which is not really where this conversation right. or question came from, but that only in the Lord part is so instructive. It's like Paul saying, hey, if you're a widow and you're looking to be married after your husband has died, make sure that he shares your worldview. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes those disagreements can come on things that are funny. Like, we disagree on how we're going to spend our time on a Saturday. Sometimes those disagreements come on things that are like, who is God? I can have the disagreement on the whole thing of like, you know, hey, we can disagree on how to spend a Saturday. We need to be on the same page with this. And so if you're wondering, and you're like at a college age and you're dating somebody, like, I would first ask, like, do they love Jesus? And then that becomes a place to take that conversation next. Yeah. What else would you add?
Well, I'd say in the South in particular too, that question can be easily dismissed, because again, so many people are raised in kind of this Christian cultural kind of idea. So they know the right answers. Mm-hmm. So they know. And I think I saw that a lot, even when I was in college, is that, you know, you'd say like, oh, like, where do you go to church? And they'll name off a church because they know of it. but they're not really, you know, attending. You ask them about their quiet time. They're like, oh, yeah, but they're not real. You know, like, so a lot of it is, like, you really have to know people. And so it does take time. And I know some people are like, well, I met someone, I think we had, I think teachers here a few years ago who had only known each other for a couple of weeks before they got married.
Yeah.
And it's just like, to me, that always blows my mind. Not that the Lord can't work that way, but it always blows my mind because how do you really know someone in that short of time? But I like the idea of really getting to know people, asking those questions, and doing those activities kind of together. Like if you go to the same church, again, church is a great place to meet people, even while you're in college. I know your classes and your social events are good places to meet people, but if you're living in the same town, hopefully you're going to the same church with people who are like-minded and you can find someone there as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's good. And so then if you're, let's say, well, and you know what I think might be instructive is for me to give a little bit of insight from my own dating life. Considering I've really only seriously dated one person and I'm now married to her. But you know, we go way back. My wife and I do. We met here in this school, not in this actual building. We've moved, but we met in this school in the fourth grade.
Wow.
I know you're blown away by
it.
He actually knows the story, so he's not surprised. But we then spent 4 days in seventh grade dating each other. She, I guess, thought I was cute, and she dated me for 4 days, but I was too immature, so she broke up. And I often joke, either she lowered her standards or I matured. It's, I don't know how much I matured.
He's matured. He's matured, so much.
But we then seriously started dating somewhere after our ninth grade year. And my wife was one of the first people in our grade to get her driver's license, so she drove me around in this white 1992 Saturn. I don't, some of our listeners don't even know what a Saturn is, but
wife's first car was a Saturn too.
Yeah. You remember you could kick the doors. Like you could like kick the, cause the doors were made of plastic. So you could just go up and kick. So we did that actually one time in this parking lot. I'm probably telling you more than you want to know in this parking lot right out there. She was away at volleyball state. She played volleyball. And so a bunch of us got her car and moved it to another parking spot. Like we lifted it up and we were like, watch this. So it was just,
I love that.
I'm not recommending anyone to do that, but
so you throw your back out now.
But that car also weighed like 1200 pounds. Anyway, I don't know why I went on a rant about her car, but we dated all throughout high school, but our relationship in high school was probably your typical dating relationship. There were breakups. There was all sorts of, there was all sorts of stuff that was just not really Christ-centered. And she and I both really began to grow in our relationship with Jesus our senior year, but our relationship together was still not, you know, one that you would want it to be if you're headed towards marriage. So we ended up breaking up going into college. And I remember that was 100% me, by the way. Like I was actually the jerk that said, I want to date all the way up until we go to college and then let's break up when we go to college, which I mean, yeah, like I think of myself doing that and I'm like, I don't even want to go there. Like I need Jesus a lot and that's proof of it. But, what ended up happening is when we went to college, we both started growing in the Lord separately. Mm-hmm. She spent a year at UTK and I went to Clemson. We both started growing in the Lord separately, and a couple months into college, probably not even that long, I looked at her trajectory in her relationship with the Lord, and my wife is beautiful. I love her. She's got an amazing personality. Like, we've got so much shared life together, but for me, what happened was I looked at her, and I was like, I see her love for Jesus, and I'm like, and this scared me. As a freshman in college, this scared me. I was like, I could marry her. And I was like, oh my gosh, should I just have that thought? And so then I drug my feet in getting back together with her for another like 18 months. Because, and here's why, like I knew, in my defense, I knew that when we got back together, like I was it. And so I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, nor was it healthy. But like in my mind, I had seen something that was so special in her. And that was what Christ was doing in her. And I was like, you know, we are wildly different. Like to get my wife on a podcast, maybe it'll happen one day. I don't know, but she's not the put a mic in, because people I think that like we're the same person.
Totally, and could not be the farther from the truth.
Yeah. She's like, she's like the soft spoken, but like athlete, like competitive drive. Like she hits a volleyball at me and I duck. Like that's sometimes happens in the driveway. And producer James knows this because he's also our neighbor. And but what happened was for me, and this kind of answers the question we got, and then I want you to weigh in from a little bit of a different perspective, because I know your dating journey was different than mine. What made that relationship worth it? Because we did long distance. She came back to U of M after a year at UTK, and she was here at Memphis for the last couple of years of college, and I was at Clemson. That's 7.5 hours. But you're asking like, okay, what makes that worth it? Well, I looked at her and I was like, I see what Christ is doing in her. I really want to spend the rest of my life. So this relationship is worth fighting for. So if I'm looking at somebody who's in a serious dating relationship in college, and they're kind of asking these big existential questions, like, is this person the one? What does it look like to pursue this in the midst of the craziness of our schedules? My question is, like, do you see them loving Jesus? And if so, do you want to fight for that relationship? And so if you, because here's the thing, like, once you get married, like, you're still fighting for that relationship, because you throw kids into the mix and you throw all these things, like, it becomes a deal where it's like, you know, hey, there's all sorts of things that could pull me and my wife apart, not just time-wise, like just being busy, but is this a relationship worth fighting for? And the more I saw her grow in the Lord, the more I was like, yes, that's, and the way she loved me, like Christ loves me. I was like, that's amazing. Cause I certainly don't deserve it. I mean, I could give her 1,000 reasons to just be mad at me every day just cause I'm a sinner. And yet she still chooses to love me.
Was there a moment, would you say, that it was like that light bulb moment, or that, you know, like, I know this is the one? Or was it more of like that gradual process?
That's a very good question. There was not a light bulb moment that I can remember, but it was more of a gradual, like, it was just watching her grow in her faith. And the more she grew in her faith, the more I was just like, okay, because I knew her, like I knew her personalities, her proclivities, all of that thing, all of those things. And like, we got along great. Like we did. Now we fought because we're two sinners and you put us in a room together and we'll eventually fight. But like that was it. It was more of a gradual, like, wow. Like, I think this could, now I drug my feet for a while. Like if we told the whole story, there's a lot more nuance there, but that became the thing too. And then we built our dating relationship in college around Jesus, and around what it looks like to have a shared life together as we pursue Christ. And so, you know, the starting point for that was like realizing that we were on the same page with those things. Mm-hmm. And then to your point, we had shared vision for ministry. So I'm at Clemson and majoring in finance and minoring in accounting. And
just funny to think about knowing you, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. I really felt just the Lord's kind of push in my heart to come back to Memphis and be in ministry here. I never imagined I would end up back at my old school being the director of student ministries, but that's proof God has a sense of humor.
Yep.
But as I shared those things with her, she was like, let's do it. Like, she was full in, like, just completely bought into the idea of, like, pouring our lives out in ministry. And so, you know, she could have very easily been somebody who loved Jesus, but never wanted to come back to Memphis and never wanted to kind of do the types of stuff we're doing and still love Jesus. So then that kind of gets at the nuts and bolts of the relationship. Like, are we on the same page and a shared vision of what God's put on our hearts? So those conversations were important too, but those conversations were also happening in the 12 to 18 months that, you know, we were, I guess, talking. Yeah, I guess that's what it was. We were talking.
Right.
And so the more I felt the Lord's leaning in this, the more she joined in with that and was excited about it. And I tell her all the time, she's my greatest ministry partner. Like, we are in ministry together.
Oh yeah.
What I get to do here, this is our ministry, not my ministry, our ministry. Even though she's not the upfront person who's, you know, on the podcast, right? We are doing ministry together and doing life together and serving the Lord together. And it's amazing. But if you rewind that back to college, those are the types of conversations we were having was, hey, how are we growing in the Lord? And then what do we see God doing with our lives? And if you're not on the same page with those things, then I think you've got something that's going to be really difficult to push through the difficulties. So,
go ahead. And I would say too, I think college is such a great opportunity for this. So, and again, anyone, all 9 of you listening who might be in college.
Could be 13.
The idea of college is you do have a lot more free time. And so I think how you use that time to create those habits and those foundational things like a strong prayer life, like getting into the Word and church, those things I think really present themselves a lot in college. And like you said, your wife were growing a lot in the Lord separately, but you were on like that similar trajectory, that similar pace. And so I feel like what I see a lot of times is, you know, people in high school, their faith is still attached to their family, their house, their, you know, the parents, whatever. And then they go off to college and then you see that kind of wavering or falling or just that change. And then they think, oh, as soon as, you know, I settle down, get a job, get married, I'll just kind of revert back onto that straight and narrow path. That's not how life works, right? Yeah. The habits that you form in those, you know, college years are the types of habits and you're going to continue on throughout your adult life. So again, what is that trajectory that you are on? And so I liked how you kind of phrased that. You guys were both like moving in together with the ministry and everything else. It's, you got to be on the same page and you got to be in it together.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're in it together, then what ends up happening is you have this shared vision where you're both excited about, mm-hmm. you don't have one pushing and pulling towards, I want to do this. Well, I want right. to do now. I don't mean like we can disagree on if we need to go to Costco tomorrow, right? Like, I'm not talking about that, but like right. the big questions about right. life, like those are the things I want to be on the same page with. And so if, you know, if somebody feels called to, you know, a career in finance, like, what mm-hmm. does that look like? Like, if you feel called to be in the military, what does that look like? Like, we're signing up for this together. And I had when we were in pre-marriage counseling, like I had somebody who looked at us and said, hey, here's the deal. Like, your money is not just your money. It's our money. So like, it's our life. Like it's, mm-hmm. we're doing, like, this is a much more serious conversation than like, who are you taking to prom your junior year? Right. I did take my wife to prom junior year though. But so, and also let me say one more thing. Not everybody has our story. Like, I know you got a lot of people that date in high school and that mm-hmm. just doesn't work out, and that's okay. Like that God's in that too. So like, I don't want anybody to feel like, oh my gosh, like I gotta.
You're the outlier.
I am literally the outlier, which mm-hmm. has kind of been the story of my whole life. But like, I am the outlier, and so I think that's really helpful to keep in mind.
And my story was very different. Again, yeah. we are roughly similar in age. We live just down the street from each other, growing up, different schools, public school.
Tell me. Well, and so Jonathan, as you're about to tell us your story, I don't know if our listeners or viewers realize this, but there was a little bit of a clip there. Because I walked out of this room for about 23 minutes or so, because he was about to tell his story. And I said, wait, hold on. I've got to go to traffic duty. And it is sunny and humid and sticky. And so we're back to hear your side of kind of your story and a little bit of that. But I'm still a little humid and hot. So I think that our viewers should just, we're keeping it real with the dozen always. Or so that are listening. So anyway, tell us a little bit about your perspective and kind of how your journey and all of those things.
Again, my story, very different than yours. I went to college, I'll say, with little dating experience in high school. Mostly took like friends to dances and things like that. Not that dating wasn't on my radar. I was just a very focused and determined person in terms of career orientation, professionalism, wanting to do well in school and things like that. And so like, it didn't really cross my mind. I get to college, start to being like, okay, like this is the time, right? Like my parents met, like, and got married right after college and things like that. So that's the norm in my mind. When I graduate college, again, I dated a few people here and there, all wonderful, godly people. I just didn't work out. Mm-hmm. When I graduated though, three of us, or four of us in our house, were either engaged or about to be engaged that summer. So mm-hmm. I was the kind of odd man out of our group. And I think, again, especially in the South, a lot of people can feel that pressure.
Yeah.
And so, again, if we are 13 viewers, if you are in college and you are feeling the pressure that like, oh man, everyone's getting married or everyone's in these deep relationships, whatever, like I have to too, just note that your story is not their story. Mm-hmm. I just think that's really important. And it was one of the things that my parents instilled into me, was to be kind of like fiercely independent, which has its positives and negatives, just for the record. But it allowed me to not kind of cave to peer pressure and just try to find someone who was just eager to get married, even if we weren't compatible.
Yeah.
And so I think that was really important, and I wasn't ready. I knew, like, not just like socially or emotionally ready. I wasn't really ready to give up some of the things I still wanted to do in life.
Yeah.
Which I know sounds really selfish, but like, I wanted to travel. I served overseas long term as a missionary. I got to go to the Middle East. I got to go to Europe twice. You know, like there were just things that like I wanted to have this more kind of fun, exciting, like let's just like experience life before, again, getting married, having kids, because then it's just a lot harder to do all those things. And so I didn't meet my wife until I was in my later 20s. And we met at, we jokingly call it teacher camp. But we both got accepted to a graduate fellowship for teachers. Mm-hmm. And it just happened to work out where you had to go as a team from your school. And my team had me and three ladies, and her school had three ladies and one gentleman. And so we, as the odd men out of our groups, as those solo gentlemen, got to room together.
Yeah.
And so one of the days we're like, hey, why don't our school and your school go out for a joint lunch together so we can like hang out and talk? And then, you know, little did I know my future wife would be there. And so we started talking and we started connecting. And she also in her 20s went out and traveled and saw the world, went to South America, Europe, Southeast Asia, all these different places. And so we started realizing like how much we had in common in terms of some of our hobbies. Well, she's from California.
Yeah.
And I was living in Memphis.
Yeah.
Which is, again, very far away. Mm-hmm. And so we did the long distance thing for a year. We were in a talking stage for a bit. And even through that, we're very open and honest about like, we didn't know if we were going to like be in this very committed distance thing or if it was going to be longer drawn out, you know, like how this was going to look. And so, you know, we weren't exclusive, I guess, as the kids say, for a bit there.
As the youths would say.
As the youths would say. And so, but I'd say after about 6 months of kind of on and off talking, we both kind of decided like, you know what, this is in both of our best interests to pursue. Like we were both ready to kind of move forward in that. And so we continue talking with a lot more intentionality every day, which again, by the way, the 2-hour time difference on a teacher schedule was killer. Oh, so I was staying up to like 11 o'clock at night to talk to, you know, my future wife. And I still had to get up at 5 a.m. the next day, which was not fun. Mm-hmm. But unlike you two, I also had a moment where I knew.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. So our stories are wildly different, which I love. So her lease ran out in like April and she wasn't moving to Memphis, which she was going to move that summer to Memphis for a job, not for me. She made that very clear to everyone when she first moved here. Although I think now if you asked her, she might say, well, maybe it was a little mid for him. You know? But she was very, you know, like independent when she first moved here. No, I didn't move for him. I moved for the job. But so she had to move out in like April and she was still in school. California goes till June and she got sick. She had like the flu. And so she hadn't packed up any of her boxes, any of the stuff, and she had to move out. And it was Friday night, and she finally got back to me. She's like, I've been sick as a dog. I have to move out Sunday, and I packed nothing. Right? Which I know that's probably your MO, because that's how you're traveling.
That's how I operate. But for everyone else who's sane, right, who doesn't like to wait till the morning of to pack for an international trip. Yeah.
Right. So she tells me that, and I was like, oh, well, I'll just fly out there and I'll help you. And she's like, no, you won't. Like, who does that? Like, I mean, we've been talking for, you know, on and off for a couple months, but like, no one does that. Yeah. Like, yeah. So it's 10 o'clock at night on a Friday. I book a 6 a.m. flight the next morning, drive myself to the airport, leave my car, fly out there. We pack up all of her stuff. We get it all to her grandparents' house. They don't live too far away. And throughout that process, we worked so well as a team. We were on the same page. We didn't fight. Everything just really clicked. And there was like one moment where like she was packing and labeling kitchen things and I was like carrying boxes to the U-Haul. And I was just like, yeah, I could do life like this. Like this is the person like that if we can conquer this.
Yeah.
Right. Then like, and I knew that, you know, she was a Christian. I knew that she loved the Lord and she loved to travel, like a lot of these things that I also shared. And so I was like, this is it. Now I didn't propose for like another like 10 months.
You mean you didn't get down on one knee in the U-Haul?
I did not. Although we did when we moved her mattress because she had the small U-Haul. I did have to stick my head up out of the sunroof on her Subaru and I held on to the mattress while we were driving the 3 miles.
Do we have a photo of that? Because we can drop that also.
No, we do not. But that was interesting. But yeah, that was kind of the moment. And so... yeah, after that, again, she moved to Memphis. We continued today. We went to the same church. We're just kind of plugged in with my friends, which, again, was hard. And one of the important things, too, especially if you end up doing distance and one of you moves, and this might sound weird, but healthy boundaries with, like, your family. Because, like, she's here with her in-laws, and they're my parents. And so it's very easy to be like, oh, I'm just going out with my parents once a week or, like, every other day or... One of the real big things and part of this communication of expectations and you're dating it to eventual marriage, one of those two is families, especially if you're doing the distance thing. So we had to kind of set some parameters, like we won't go and see them more than like twice a month, right? Yeah. So that way we could feel that separation. We could feel like it was us and not just she's a part of my nuclear family. But like we really did kind of leave and cleave and start our own. But I'd say for people considering, right, moving from situationships to real relationships to eventual marriage would be have a lot of those conversations on the front end. I mean, don't even wait to premarital counseling. Have those before you propose.
Yeah.
Not just about finances and, you know, again, life goals, things like that, but also just expectations about things that you don't even know you have expectations about. Who's going to do the laundry? Who's going to do the dishes? Who's going to do most of the grocery shopping? Who's going to do the cooking? I mean, like, just little things that you don't realize that you have an expectation for your spouse to do, and then all of a sudden they like don't do it, but you've never actually told them that, like, hey, can you help me with this? And then also, like, just communication, I think, is so important. I know we're talkers, so it comes more naturally to us. So if you're not a big talker, I would still say communication, I think, is key.
Yeah. Well, and what two things I'll draw out of that, and then we got to draw this to a close because we have a flashing red light.
I know, I saw that.
Yeah, it's like blinking at you real fast. Like, which is, I think the camera's way of saying we're done.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that you address the ring by spring culture that some people feel on college campuses, which is like,
I never heard that. I like that.
Yeah. If I don't have a ring on my finger by spring, then what am I doing with my life?
Right.
And like, the Lord might call you to a season of singleness or a life of singleness, and that's okay. Like, that's. Yeah. That's good. That's what he wants for you. So don't feel this undue pressure to have all of this stuff. Once again, my story doesn't have to be your story. Your story doesn't have to be my story. Like, if I'm journeying with the Lord, he'll take care of those things. But the other thing is, like, just the fact that you were able to wade into some of those conversations, I think are huge. I mean, we heard one story of a guy who sat down and just on the first date laid out, hey, this is some of my baggage from my past. And I just want to let you know on the first date, so that if this is an issue, we don't go any further than this. I think within reason, that's okay to do.
Yeah.
But what this all comes back to is a bunch of courageous conversations that you get to have with maybe your future spouse.
Yeah. So, oh, wait, can I add one more thing?
Yeah,
I know, I'm so sorry.
I don't know if
the camera will last. Okay, we'll go. All right, James is giving us the roll finger. All right, so we're good. Is talk to people who've been married for a long time. I mean, go and find those couples who are just solid rocks together and ask them for advice. I mean, my parents have been a wonderful example of what that looks like. They've been married for over 40 years. And not only did I ask them a whole bunch of questions, which my mom's more of the talker than my dad, but I still got advice from both. My friends, when they were all engaged, they came to talk to my parents. And again, their parents have been married for a long time, but they just felt really comfortable. My parents are very open. So if you're listening to this and you are that older couple, find out those younger people who might be needing advice or looking forward or whatever, and let them know that that's an open, you know, kind of highway for them to express questions and for you to give really good wisdom.
Yeah. Well, and one other thing, I'll say this and then we're going to wrap this up. In future podcast episodes, we might replace you with a female who can tell, because we are two dudes. We are two dudes telling our sides of the story, so to speak. So that's also something to be on the lookout for on future Courageous Conversations podcast. But I want to once again thank our listener, you know who you are, for the suggestion for today's. And if anybody else wants to hear anything, hey, comment. Also, don't forget to subscribe. I mean, you'd hate to miss the next episode when we should be tackling, unless something else comes up, we should be tackling what do we do with the whole idea of like God being good and all powerful, which is true, but yet bad things happening. Yep. So we'll deal with that. But we want to thank you, our Courageous Conversations listener, for spending time with us today. And we cannot wait to have you back with us on the next Courageous Conversations podcast.